With our special guest this hour, Dr. Kenneth Stoller, his book, Incurable Me. And we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about this disaster in our healthcare system. Welcome back to the interactive portion of the show with Dr. Kenneth Stoller. We'll take your calls. Kenneth, the Zika virus, I went on the air several years ago when the CDC was talking about this as a possible pandemic in said with my guests, no, it's not going to be a pandemic. It's a scare tactic. It's not going to happen. More people die every year from the conventional flu, 36,000 Americans. Not to worry, folks. And you know what? To this day, it still hasn't happened. Now, they still try to create an issue every once in a while, but would you agree with me? I assume you do.
Well, except for the 36,000 cases of flu, that's actually propaganda as well, scare tactics by the CDC, because they're seeking money and control, driving fear through mainstream media to parrot the infectious disease threat of the day so they can get money, whether it's the bird flu or Ebola or the swine flu or Zika. So in early 2016, the World Health Organization jumped the gun by declaring that Zika virus was a global pandemic of biblical proportions. And the head of the CDC and the NIH begged for $2 billion in emergency funding from Congress, which they eventually received. It's Zika, Zika. Nothing else could cause the microcephaly, not the insecticide that Brazil was putting in the water supply in its northeastern area, and certainly not the DPT vaccines they were giving to every pregnant woman. That had nothing to do with the microcephaly. That question, along with incompetent science hijacked by political forces to extract some $2 billion of funding from Americans, most of which will go to, you know, vaccine research and development for a shot that no one might need. There is no concrete evidence that Zika causes microcephaly, and there is no pandemic on the horizon. So there have been three false pandemics announced by the World Health Organization.
Yes. It's like crying wolf, right?
Yeah, it's a pattern of political abuse of public trust, reaching for massive wealth transfer from U.S. taxpayers to big pharma vaccine manufacturers. And it's just one of many disturbing trends. Meanwhile, a real pandemic, Lyme disease, is called a nuisance by the CDC. You know what a nuisance disease is? Acne. That's a nuisance disease, not Lyme disease. But they don't have anything to sell yet. When they do, everything will change.
Dramatically, too, won't it?
Overnight.
Yep. Indeed. Let's take some calls here. They're lining up to talk with you, Kenneth. Dr. Kenneth Stoller, our guest. He says it the way he believes it and sees it, and I find that to be refreshing. Let's go to Jerry, truck driving in Oregon, to get this thing started. Oh, Jerry just hung up. Let's go to Jim in Los Angeles. Oh, he's not ready either. Here he is. Go ahead, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, George. Thank you for taking my call so much. Your guest is just excellent.
I wanted to
help you just a little bit on, you asked him, how did fluoride ever get as far as it did? And I have the name of the gentleman. He was known as the PR of, the father, I should say, of public relations, Ed Bernays.
Oh, sure. He started it all.
Yeah, you've heard of the name before, George.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
This guy, all he did, they called him the Machiavellian genius, because he also wrote a book, by the way, called Crystallizing Public Opinion, which Goebbels, Hitler's propagandist.
Master of propaganda, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And what he did is he just told listen to this, this is amazing, he just told the American Dental Association to start funneling millions of dollars, these corporations that leak this toxic byproduct into our water streams and into our groundwater. He is absolutely correct about the development of nuclear power. That was part of it, but also the steel and aluminum industries wanted to know it would cost them billions to clean this up. So he just said, look, just send millions of dollars to the American Dental Association and they'll get on board with you. It's all about the money all the time,
yep,
George. That's
it sure
what
is.
It is.
Follow the money.
Yeah. all about the money. And this guy was canonized and glorified, brought on the David Letterman show as some hero. He lived to be 105. Obviously, he didn't drink the fluoride, right?
Probably not. Kenneth, want to react to that?
Well, yes. I mean, we are getting fed literally poisons, both, you know, in our minds with, you know, lies about fluoride being good for you and good for your teeth. And, you know, my feeling is if there's enough money, people will sell their mothers to the glue factory. So you just apply enough money and you can buy academicians, you can buy research journals, you can buy the press, you can bleed out the FDA from the inside, you can bleed out the CDC from the inside, and then we're stuck.
Yeah, we're stuck for sure, but how do we pull out of this? We can't. How does the average person beat this system, Kenneth?
They have to wake up to what is actually taking place. And it's not a comfortable situation when you realize what you've believed your entire life may actually not be true. It may actually be harming you. But that's how it starts. You just have to wake up and understand the real facts in these situations and who's responsible for your health. It's not some corporation. It's not eating corporatized food. It's not brushing your teeth with corporate toothpaste that has a poison in it that's more toxic than lead. I mean, if people really understood that, would they put fluoride in their mouth? If someone
Heck
came
no.
up and says, you know, that's actually more toxic than lead, they'd stop brushing their teeth with fluoride toothpaste. But there's no little Jiminy Cricket that jumps out of your medicine cabinet and tells you that. So it's our responsibility, not some corrupt corporation, not some corrupt federal agency. It's our responsibility to understand what we're putting in our bodies, what we're breathing into our lungs, and what kind of information is coming into our minds. We have to take responsibility for that.
It is so frustrating for people that get bombarded every day, Kenneth, with all these other situations, and now they have to worry about this, losing confidence in government to protect them when they're supposed to protect them, and it's just not happening, is it?
It's very comforting to think that some big, powerful organization has your best interests at heart.
That's your bet.
It is very anxiety-provoking to think that, no, they don't, and you better figure this out for yourself. It's not something, it's not a place where a lot of people want to go. It makes them very unhappy.
Next up, we've got Sherry, truck driving in Oregon. Welcome to the program, Sherry, on the Wildcard Line. Hi there.
Hello, George, doctor.
Hi.
Hi, have a question. I've been asking doctors for 17 years, and that since you are a specialist in hyperbaric chambers, if AIDS virus and similar viruses are anaerobic, then has anybody...
You're breaking up a little bit, Anna. Sherry, you still there?
Why can't we reduce the viral load for HIV, et cetera, by putting them in a hyperbaric chamber and doing therapy that way for them?
All right. That's the question. Kenneth, what do you think?
Well, before the antiretroviral drug cocktail was refined, there was a book that came out called AIDS Under Pressure, and it was all about using hyperbaric oxygen therapy to do just that. But hyperbaric oxygen therapy is like the Cinderella of conventional medicine. It's not going to make some big corporation any money. So whether it's in treating traumatic brain injuries or children with cerebral palsy or even Lyme disease, because the Lyme organism is anaerobic and it will die if the oxygen levels get too high, that's not going to make a corporation a lot of money, and so people are not going to find out about it.
We go next to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hello, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And again, I thank you and applaud you and the Coast staff for everything you do and for bringing us
You're very
seven
welcome.
Nights a week, the Coast to Coast program. Dr. Stoller, my question is about stem cell therapy. And you know, there are a lot of clinics around the world, in Britain, in Germany, in Asia, in Mexico, that are implementing the new improved stem cell therapy, which is not embryonic, but is based on taking stem cell extracts from the bone marrow of the patient, reculturing the extracts, and then reinjecting it into the spine. And you keep hearing, you know, I mean, miracle stories of rejuvenation, regeneration of organs such as the heart, pancreas, liver, brain, spinal cord, etc. Sports Illustrated a few months ago ran a story about over 100 athletes who had gone overseas to get stem cell therapy. And I believe, help me out on this, George, I think it was Peyton Manning who went overseas for
stem cells in his neck.
Yes, yeah, stem cells in his neck, and he had...
And it worked.
It worked. I mean, he ended up playing another Super Bowl. And so I was wondering if you would talk about that, Dr. Stoller, and about the work that clinics are doing overseas. Do you see that as viable? And how can the average man, the average woman here in the United States get access to that therapy?
Well, in the United States, it is legal for a physician to take a patient's bone marrow and then return that bone marrow back into their circulatory system. It is not legal to take out that bone marrow that's full of stem cells, reculture them or expand those cells, and then put them back in the patient's body. So there can be no manipulation to those stem cells for that procedure to be legal in the United States. Now, in other countries, as you have pointed out, they can grow those stem cells, expand them, increase their numbers, and then give them back to the patient. But that's not legal in the United States because we have, you know, issues involving money and control, and so it doesn't happen here like that.
No, it does not, but it would sure be dramatic if we continue to do that kind of research and using. I've been a proponent on stem cells for years. I've had a guest who helped people with heart issues, Dr. Stoller, and they injected their own bone marrow stem cells into their hearts. And there was one individual who could barely walk 3 feet without having to stop and sigh and breathe. He started jogging. I mean, it's remarkable.
There's no question that it works. No question at all.
Next up, we go to Alicia in Oregon. Welcome to the program. Alicia, go ahead.
Thank you, Georges.
Sure.
That hyperbaric oxygen therapy, is that available in the U.S.? And what is the best way to go off my disease-modifying agent for MS? It's $10,000 a month.
Wow. Okay, go ahead, Kenneth. It is available, isn't it?
Most of the hyperbaric chambers in the United States are at hospitals, and the treatment there is limited to their own wound care patients. There are freestanding hyperbaric clinics, like the one I have at Dr. Azzolino's Functional Neurology Clinic in San Francisco, and we treat off-label indications. In other words, indications that insurance companies will not reimburse for. So for an MS patient who would require about 40 treatments a year on average, that can be a little on the expensive side, which is why it's nice in the United Kingdom they have this charity set up for MS patients. But MS can be caused by many different things, mold toxins, insecticides, retroviruses, and, of course, the many misdiagnosed cases of Lyme disease. So it's never just one thing. So I can't give you any, you know, specific advice to you with your particular situation, because who knows what's actually setting off your MS.
Right. Okay, thank you, doctor.
All right, Alicia. Why won't insurance companies cover that?
Insurance companies don't want to cover anything they don't have to cover.
That's true. That's absolutely
true.
And
so if
they love saying no,
it doesn't become what's called standard of care, they don't have to cover it. But who controls what standard of care is?
They do.
That's right.
Listen, here's a person who would love to go through that kind of treatment, who can't afford 40 treatments, and probably would have to move to San Francisco to do that, is because, what is it, weekly? How often do you have to get the 40 treatments, over what period of time?
For MS patients, the protocol that's used in the United Kingdom is you do a run of 20 treatments every other week.
And what's a treatment consist of?
60 to 90 minutes at like 2 atmospheres of pressure on 100% oxygen.
Are you in like a tube or something?
Yeah, you're in a chamber, just like I said, the scuba divers use for decompression.
All right, I think I'd go nuts. You'd have to knock me out or something. Some people get claustrophobic in those things, don't they?
Well, they get. Most people are not claustrophobic, but some people do have confinement anxiety, and we have ways of dealing with that for most people.
Okay.
Without
right.
knocking them out.
Right. Just punch me out.
You know, when you realize this is making you feel better, you find a way to tolerate the treatments. But so in the United Kingdom, after you do your first block of 20 treatments, you do a treatment every other week, and then every 6 months you do a block of 10 treatments. And it's not a cure for MS. Hyperbaric oxygen is not a cure for MS, but if you combine it with things that support the immune system, with things that help the body detoxify, then you have a more comprehensive, holistic treatment to MS, not giving somebody something to suppress their immune system, which is a major part of treating MS in the United States and elsewhere. You want to enhance someone's immune system. You want to help their body get rid of toxins. And if they have an infection, you want to help their body fight the infection, not mask the ability of their immune system to deal with it.
Can I ask how much a treatment costs without any kind of insurance, obviously?
So if you were paying cash in a hospital, let's say you had a diabetic foot ulcer, and you didn't have insurance, and you wanted a hyperbaric oxygen treatment to help your diabetic foot wound heal faster, they would be charging you around $2,000, $3,000 a treatment. Now, at a freestanding clinic, such as the one I operate in San Francisco, it's between, and again, depends on what part of the country you're in, anything from $150 to $300, depending on what
treatment. That's not bad.
Well, you know, it's not bad, except if you've had a chronic illness like MS or Lyme disease, you've often got to the point where you have spent
thousands
of dollars.
A lot of money.
You spent your life savings trying to help yourself before someone actually told you what you had, and now all your money's gone.
We're coming back for final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to come back with final calls with Dr. Kenneth Stoller, author of his book, Incurable Me, and take your calls as well. A couple little events coming up for you at our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. Track my events, UFOCon 2017 coming up in March in just a few weeks. That's it. Up near San Francisco. Come on up to San Francisco and have a great time. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Kenneth Stoller with us. Kenneth, a vaccine, a simple vaccine, how much does that cost, a single-dose vaccine, generally at the doctor's office?
Well, you know, it has been so long since I ordered a vaccine for a patient. I just don't give them. I've totally lost confidence in vaccines. They're contaminated with cancer-causing retroviruses. They're full of heavy metals, aluminum, and mercury. I would never give that to a patient. So I guess I'm like George H.W. Bush, who didn't know how much milk costs. I don't know how much vaccine costs because I won't order them for patients.
What would you do if you were a parent, you have a new baby, and of course the state is compelling you to get a vaccine? What do you do?
Well, you mean like in California where
they are
coerced to get vaccines or their kids can't go to school?
Oh, you're kicked out of school or don't even get in.
Constitutional, but like everything, tell it to a judge. Getting a medical exemption is really their only option.
What is the rationale for kicking a kid out of school who doesn't get a vaccine? Because if all the other kids have the vaccines, they're not going to get sick from that kid, right?
Yeah, really, the only people who should get vaccinated are the unvaccinated. They should get vaccinated against the kids who are vaccinated because it's the vaccinated kids who are spreading the viruses. They shed the viruses. You become, with pertussis, whooping cough, you become a little pertussis factory
sure.
for a month after you get the vaccine. So it's actually the vaccinated kids who are keeping these diseases going. But the public doesn't, you know, the public doesn't know this.
Let's go to the final calls here. We'll go to Dominic in Schenectady, New York, east of the Rockies. Dominic, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
I was reading on a book on environment, and there's a difference between toxic pollution and natural pollution. Now, these toxic chemicals, I read that, they're not in their natural form. They've been taken out of their natural form. They need the bond.
All right, let's get your take on that before we lose him on the phone there, Kenneth. Environmental toxins as opposed
to... There's something to be said for that. You know, the fluoride that they put in our drinking water is industrial waste. It is not fluoride as it exists in nature.
It's a byproduct of something, isn't it?
It's an industrial waste byproduct.
That's exactly right. Wasn't it used as fertilizer, too? I think that's it was like a derivative of fertilizer.
There was definitely fluoride in the insecticides that have been used in the past, that's for sure.
Jeez. Let's go to Nita in Panama City Beach, Florida. Hello, Nita. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good.
I had a question about as far as brushing your teeth. Alternatives like baking soda, and also I called into poison control about the ingredient on a white strip, and they said there was a product in it that it was similar to what you use in oven cleaner, but in a low dose. Is that true? That there's an ingredient in the white strips that's...
Most of the whitening agents have some kind of peroxide or hydrogen peroxide like chemical in it, and you know, there's certainly nothing wrong with hydrogen peroxide.
No, that's a good germ killer, isn't it?
Yeah.
That would work. That would work. Nina, does that answer that for you?
Cleaner. I don't know.
Go ahead, Nina. I missed that last part.
The poison control told me that that ingredient is a low dose of the same thing that's in oven cleaner on the white strip.
Hmm.
It was purchased at a dollar store, so maybe it was something sent from China or something.
Maybe, maybe. Be careful with these things. Simple as that. So what would you do, Kenneth, in terms of looking at pesticides and chemicals and what's in your water system? I mean, does the book address all that? I mean, somewhere we've got to go to a guidebook or something for people to be able to go through all this stuff.
Yes, you know, at the end of my book, I kind of walk people through what a functional medicine physician might suggest for people to help their bodies grow stronger, improve their immune systems, improve their diets, because we really need to take more responsibility for our own health, given that physicians don't seem to be hip to some of the things that are making us sick. You know, I work at a functional neurology clinic. That's where the Hyperbaric Therapy Center of San Francisco is located, inside a Dr. Azzolino's functional neurology clinic. And Siobhan, who's our front office person, who's probably the best front office person I've ever come across, she fields all the phone calls from all over the world for patients who are seeking this kind of therapy, where you get to the bottom of the problem, you don't put a Band-Aid on it. And it's a lot to ask people who are not trained in the medical field to heal themselves when they are clueless about what to do. But we're in a transition state. We're in a transition state from mega-controlled corporate medicine into an area where people take more responsibility for their health and don't buy the corporate-sponsored propaganda anymore.
Medically speaking, what does a hyperbaric oxygen chamber do for you in terms of what does it do? Because it's pressurized, isn't it?
Right. Under pressure, oxygen activates genes. It stimulates about 8,000 different genes. So in the case of a traumatic brain injury, where those little mitochondria in our cells, you know, the little centers that take oxygen and sugar and convert it into the gasoline the cells run on, hyperbaric oxygen will actually rehabilitate those mitochondria, actually cause new mitochondria to grow so that the nerve cells have more energy. And because, you know, when you get a concussion, I'm sure you've heard, you know, multiple concussions build on each other. And the question is, well, what are they building? This bank of knocked out mitochondria in your neurons. So by turning those mitochondria back on, hyperbaric oxygen can reverse, in many cases, completely some of the damage caused by traumatic brain injury.
John in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hi, John. Good morning to you.
Hi. How are you, George?
Good.
You know, I've been enjoying your show for a long time.
Thank you.
Before that, I enjoyed Art Bell. And believe it or not, before that, for many, many years as a little boy, I enjoyed Long
John Neville.
he was fantastic.
Yeah, he was.
However, here's the story that I'm privileged to have on the fluoride. And thank you, gentlemen, for covering the fluoride story. Fluoride, as you know, is it's a byproduct, a waste product of refining aluminum. Now, in order to refine the aluminum, they had this waste product to dump somewhere. They didn't know where to dump it. Unfortunately, it took place in my home state, New York City. And people were complaining, so they were saying you can't dump waste products there. So what they did was they got the ADA. And by the way, the company that was refining it is a company we all know. I don't know if you want me to mention the name of the company or not. I won't until you tell me to do so, if you want me to. But in any event, they were dumping it in the waters, the drinking waters. We were drinking it. And they said to they got the ADA, American Dental Association, to find a reason why it's good, and two weeks it took for them to find that it stops dental cavities for children, ha, ha, ha. So they went back and they told the politicians of New York City and New York State, well, it does this, and they said, wonderful, we'll keep you because we want your tax money, we want your employment people here, we want everybody here, we want the privilege of having a large corporation here, so we're going to keep you, thank you very much. And that's how they went into using fluoridation when really it's a waste product. It's toxic, as you gentlemen both pointed out. And I just wanted to mention that to you. Now, that's documented. And if you want to, I might refer you to Gary Null.
Gary Null.
Very good. Okay. Very good. So I just wanted to mention that to you and let you know again, George, I enjoy your show, and Dr. Kenneth Stoller, tomorrow I'm getting it for your book, most definitely. I'm going to the book.
Great, great read. Incurable Me, by the way, that's the name of it. My mother, who was a stickler on health and believed everything that government told you in those days, back in the 50s and 60s, you never questioned what government had to say, Kenneth. There was a dentist that came to our school, and he used to give us fluoride treatments in the school. I mean, a series of two or three treatments, and he'd just wash your mouth with fluoride. Ugh! That stuff's in my system.
I had it myself.
Yep. They really thought it prevented cavities and everything else. What a great story they convinced people.
I mean, they thought that because they trusted the government. And
you never questioned government in those days.
You didn't, but now you have to.
Now you have.
Question
all over the place. And governments acted the same way then as they do now. It's just that we weren't as suspicious. How'd we get so smart?
Well, the question is, are we getting smart enough in time
to do something about it?
I mean, we're addicted to pesticides. We do not have to be using pesticides the way we're using them. We can, you know, if some big multinational wants to roll us over with GMOs and glyphosate, another pesticide that does not biodegrade, the public seems to be almost
oblivious to it
and helpless. I mean, in California, at least we're getting Prop 65 warnings on Roundup finally. But how many years did that?
Oh, I mean, I just had a story of a pet food supplier that would provide ingredients to some of the other big pet food companies that, you know, they're getting fined and charged because instead of putting a lot of chicken in the food as they purported to do, it's chicken feathers. Feathers! All ground up. Albeit you're feeding it to your pet, your animal, but my God.
Well, chicken feathers are chicken parts as far as they're concerned.
Kathleen in Kona, Hawaii. Go ahead, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, George. That was a nutty story about the fluoride in the schools.
Oh, God, yeah. We went through that.
I mean, I'm about your age, and I remember the polio.
Yep, they did that, too. And then they went to the sugar cube.
Right.
Well, at least better than the shot.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so here's my question.
All right.
So I want to ask you, Dr. Stoller, about your take on a high white count in the blood. Now, I'll try to do it real quick. My husband and I are organic farmers in Hawaii 30 years. But, you know, the land we're on, who knows what went on before that. 12 years ago, my husband became very ill. And we did everything, antibiotic, and so fever and chills and sweats and all this and that. The blood count came back at 35. So, you know, then it was a diagnosis of a CCL, I think.
Is it 35? Is that high or low, Kathleen?
That's high.
That's high, okay.
Apparently. And so they wanted to chemo us, or my husband, and we decided, no, went to the naturopath. And for 12 years, no problems, none. Okay, now 12 years later, a lot of hard work. We always do it. We're in our 60s. He started to develop a cramping in the muscles between his ribs. And it's pretty debilitating. And working with the naturopath, they're calling it a chondritis, costochondritis, trying to use potassium, whatever. Anyway, it got crazy, so we had to go to the hospital, and they did a blood draw, and they didn't test it for 6 days, but when they did, they showed a white count of 150.
Jeez, so that's like leukemia, isn't it?
It is, apparently, but he had no other symptoms. He's very strong, just the thing with the back. No fevers, no infection, nothing. And we're in that position at the moment, still trying to get him up again to get another testing when there's no problem except that since November, there were three separate times where the muscle would cramp.
Kathleen, we're almost out of time, and I want you to get your question.
Okay, so I want to hear what he says about high white count.
Well, I mean, I can't address specifically your situation, but and I understand you said your guys are organic farmers, and you may not be using pesticides, but the farms around you may be using pesticides, and our addiction to pesticides is so much of our medical problems that would be, you know, number one on my list that I would be looking at, you know, if he was a patient at the Azzolino Functional Neurology Clinic, we would be looking for all kinds of pesticide residues and see if something was out of kilter in that department. But, you know, those numbers are consistent with what's called leukemia.
Kenneth, let's talk about your book, Incurable Me. I'd like people to be able to pick it up. Amazon.com, I take it. Where else?
It's at Barnes & Noble's as well. So it's at, you know, bookstores as they exist at the moment.
Might have time for one more quick question. Jack in New Jersey. Jack, go ahead.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I can talk to you about EECP for congestive heart failure, how good that is. That's pumping blood back through your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to you about fluoridation of water supplies. I gave testimony in 1979 against it, mass medication. You know, it was only good for, it was even recommended to the Congress that it was only good for children from 0 to 6 years of age, only with primary teeth. The rest of the country was getting it, you know, given to them. Some of the other testimony that was against it was from nursing homes where people with high fluoridation in their, or fluoride in their water would roll over and they would be fracturing their ribs and dying all over Canada. You know, one of the things that's a hydrogen peroxide in water supply is great for getting rid of iron in wells. And it's a fabulous way of cleaning up wells. You know, the thing with the fluoridation is, you know, with secure teeth modeling. And if I also operated the city that I was representing when I gave testimony against it was the city of Jersey City. And that was the first chlorinated water supply, something that was really good. But, you know, I also operated the city of Newburgh in New York, which was the first system that had fluoridated water supply. And why did they pick that out? They picked it out basically because the city was on about 72%, social welfare.
That's a good point. Out of time, of course. Kenneth, I want to thank you for being on the program. Name of the book is called Incurable Me. Great information, and a doctor who's got the guts to come forward and just say it the way he just did. Up next, Bill Shutt joins us. His work, here it goes, it's called Cannibalism. He's next.